In Romans chapter 10, we just sang with our mouth. We just sang about an awesome God that humbles us. That just what an incredible thing. In Romans chapter 10, in verse 10, with the heart, man believes to righteousness, and with the mouth, confession is made to salvation. Can you think of the wonderful things that we do with our mouth, our tongue? We just sang songs of praise to a God that awes us. We, with our tongue, confess our faith, our confidence in Jesus as King, and proclaim Him as our Lord. With our mouth, our tongue, we can go like the apostles, and we can go and we can teach all who we come into contact with about that King, and wonderful things that is possible because of the power of our mouth, power of our tongue. But isn't a scary thing that same mouth that can confess can reject. The same mouth that can sing songs of praise can sing songs of just horrible immorality. The same song, the same tongue that can speak of Christ can be the same tongue that can speak of all manner of sinful things. You see, powerful things. But when Satan gets through with it, it's doing something completely different than the intents. Same thing with our anger. I want us to look today at how Satan has done the very same thing, a powerful tool that we can have and do have. And yet when Satan gets through with it, it's not working the way it was supposed to. It's not working the way there was intent to. Have you ever done anything or hurt somebody else just with the brush of a hand? Something terrible happened, something that should have happened, and oh, I was just mad. As if that explained everything. That should, whatever it was, you just got to excuse it. Don't worry about it. Don't hold me accountable for it. I was mad. Have we ever said that? Maybe we have. Have we ever heard it? Probably we have. But it's the idea that is, if I was angry when I did it, you know, I just brush it aside. Don't worry about it. We've heard the phrase, and I'm assuming that there's still classes out teaching this. I'm assuming that, but I think it would be right. We all heard that you can go and take what's called anger management classes. Well, you know, there's an inference in that. It's not. I don't even know what the opposite would be. It's not anger disappearance classes. There's an acknowledgement. Anger is kind of a part of living. It's not. There's no class we can take where anger disappears. But there are some things we can do to manage that emotion. In Ephesians chapter 4, I want to look at something that God tells us about this. And what's clearly learned in Ephesians chapter 4 is that anger in and of itself is not sinful. Maybe we lump it in and we kind of, because of all the horrible things that have happened in a moment of anger, we kind of lump it in as a sinful thing. But that is not true. That's a step too far. Anger itself, just in and of itself, is not at all a sinful thing. In Ephesians chapter 4, verse 26, Paul writing to Ephesians, he says, be angry and sin not. It is possible for both of those things to be true at the same time. There are things that we and you can be legitimately, with authority, angry at, and it not be sinful, provided that we manage, provided that we are able to handle that. See, the problem is not just sin and anger in and of itself. The problem is what we get angry about. I know in Good Hope Tomorrow's collection day, I'm going to get angry because the truck skips my house and we've got a lot of filth in the front yard. And then I go and turn the TV on, and with intention and choice, I bring filth into the very living room. And I'm not angry about that. You know, sometimes the problem is not just anger. It's what we're angry about and how that anger comes out. And we'll talk more about those in just a moment. But Ephesians chapter 4 infers that there is a power to anger. There is an advantage to it if we handle it right. And so I used that introduction earlier to just make the point how often it is. This would be a fun thought question. Just kind of to discuss in a quiet thing. And how many things has God given us with the intention of good, the intention to our benefit. And then Satan gets through with it, and it's distorted, perverted. We talked about the tongue. So many wonderful things we can use for our tongue. There's a power to it, but it can be used for a lot of perversions. Think about the computer. There are people who have Bible classes where they're Skyping each other. They're having Bible studies from state to state, nation to nation. And there are a lot of benefits to the computer age. But there's a lot of pornography. And there's a lot of marriages that have been destroyed. And there's a good thing. Evil uses. Anger could be lumped into that. Another thing where Satan has just taken something good and then exploited that. So I want us to look today at the power of anger and our responsibilities toward that. And let's start with the fact that we just need to understand its advantage. Turn to Psalm chapter 7, to the 7th Psalm. We need to start here. Because the truth of the matter, because we are people of human nature, we have to start here. Me and you, let's just be honest and let's come clean. Me and you are not going to do much of anything until we see the value in it. We're going to go on a diet until we see a value. We will not cut out sugar. We will not cut out red meat. We will not exercise. We will not do this and we will not do that. We're not going to do anything until we see a value. It's just how we're typically wired. We need to see the value of proper anger. Because if we don't see the value in it, then all this is for naught. We've got to first of all see the value. And the first one is, it is a godlike trait. It's a trait of deity. We could start in Mark chapter 3 and some of the various other ones where Jesus cleansed the temple. We can see Jesus behaving where anger at sin drove him to action. But look in Psalm chapter 7. Look in the 7th Psalm, one of the Psalms of David, verse 11. God is a righteous judge. Well, amen to that. That's a part of that awesomeness that we sang about just a moment ago. God is a righteous judge. And God is angry with the wicked every day. You remember that psalm? Were we aware of such a blunt statement? It's been a lot of days passed before David put pen to paper here with inspiration. There's been thousands of years passed since David put pen to paper through inspiration. A lot of days have come, a lot of days have gone. God has indignation with sin every day. Angry about it every day. There is a power to it. There's a God-like nature to it if we're handling it, if we're managing it. And so first of all, we need to see the power of it. It's a way we become more like His image. So let's, before we go any farther, just pause. We live in a sinful world. We acknowledge that. We live in a sinful world and we hate that, right? But how deeply do we hate it? We're going to read verses about that in a moment. But is it possible that we can become so callous? Is it possible because we live in such a sinful place and we see so many things every day? Divorce, a part of every neighborhood you've ever drove through. Immorality and all. Does it jar us anymore to see people of the same sex walking down the highway holding hands? Does such, and that's one example. Now, there's 5,000 more of them. Does such plain rejection of God's standards, does it bother us? It bothers God every single day. And so the humbling question is, are we like Him or not? There's a value in it. Turn to 2 Peter chapter 2. It makes us godlike. A second point, very similar to this is, an anger towards sin can prevent us from engaging in it. A properly managed anger towards sin can keep us away from a lot of things. And here's a great example of that. We live in an evil culture? Yes, we do. Would you think Sodom was worse? God wiped it off the face of the earth. Gone. Disappeared. And there's not been any archaeological digs going on there. Gone. And right in the middle of it, by a bad choice, is Lot and his family. And we know that culture impacted his daughters. We know that culture impacted his son-in-laws. It impacted his wife. How in the world did Lot get out of there? Verse 7. It talks about just Lot, righteous Lot, who was sorely distressed with the filthy, lascivious life of the wicked. That righteous man, dwelling among them, seeing and hearing, tormented his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. What he saw sickened him, vexed his soul. We don't talk like that anymore, but we know what it means to be in torment. As a matter of fact, the scriptures use that to talk about a place of annihilation, where there's just the punish and condemnation. And we know what torment is. And it says he was tormented every day. That's how he was able to get out. And again, I'm going to ask the question. We live in a wicked place, a wicked world. We see this stuff every day. Does it torment us? Does it, or have we gotten so cold that we recognize it, we see it, and we just move on? Not really upset. Seen it so much, it was just we can't be pricked by it anymore. A properly trained anger makes us godlike. Do we see the power in that? A properly trained anger will keep us out of so many sinful things. Do we see the anger in that? Look in Romans chapter 12. Romans chapter 12. Maybe this is what it comes down to. Romans chapter 12, what you've got is like a contrast going on. If this is true, then this can be true. A connection that's being made. Romans chapter 12, verse 9. Let love be without hypocrisy. Let it be genuine, is the point. Not lip service. We're not going to say it because we're supposed to. It's genuine. It's real. No hypocrisy within it. The older translations will use the word abhor. Abhor that which is evil. We don't use that word at all. That's just kind of disappeared from everyday language. But here's what the definition is. Extremely hate. Now, do you see the contrast going on? Love, let it be genuine. And within that very same heart, that genuine love exists, there is to be an extreme hate to what's evil. All of it that would be evil. Anything that separates us from God and that spiritual relationship that we have with Him that we looked at earlier today, anything that would keep us out of that light, that is evil. And it is to be extremely hated. So what you've got at its ground level, you've got a contrast going on. Love this, and it better be genuine and real. And hate this, and it's not just a peripheral hate, it's an extreme hate of all evil. Not just those big ticket items like murder, whatever. All things are evil. Extremely hated. So there's a contrast. But can we see how there's also a connection? My love toward godly things, my love toward spiritually things, is not going to be completely genuine if I don't have an extreme hate of anything that's contrary to that, right? These work together. You can't really do one without doing the other. They don't work at simultaneously. So what we've got is, if my genuine love is lacking, and my hatred is not all that extreme, I can't do the one I'm supposed to be doing. Do we see the power that comes from a trained, managed anger? And if we're not, if we don't have this extreme hate, could that be the reason why we might be a little apathetic towards certain sins? Evil can't be accepted, is the point. And so, because we are what we are, we don't act all that much until we see a reason. We don't make a lot of changes in our life until we are shown that we need to make such changes. There is a power to anger. Don't just brush it off as all anger is sinful. That's not true. God's angry today. I mean, He's angry every day at wickedness. Today's one of those days. But the how and the what, He manages. And maybe that's a problem. That we're going to make applications about this in just a moment. But let's understand the value to be godlike. And to have this emotion within us that keeps us away from sinful things. And to have this emotion within us that makes us extremely hate evil things. That is beneficial. And that is powerful. But so is the tongue. And it gets misused. So are computers. And they get misused. So can our anger be misused. So not only is it powerful, but we've got to understand the danger of it. I'm sure in an audience this big, there's probably a lot of people here that might be called gun people. And probably have taught your kids about that. And here are some of the basics. I'm not a gun person, but I know the basics. The basics is when you start teaching the little ones, you're going to teach them, you don't ever point this at anybody. And you never walk if it's loaded. As a matter of fact, why don't you just pop it open and we'll walk with an open barrel. And even when you know it's unloaded, you do not point it at somebody. Those are some of the basics, right? What's going on? What's going on is this is a powerful weapon. And because it's powerful, it is dangerous. And so you treat it very carefully. You don't have to be a gun person to understand those basics. And it's not guns alone that such an example could be used. There's a lot of powerful things in our life that are very dangerous if misused. Anger is one of them. So let's address that. We can't ignore that. Let's talk about the how. Powerful thing, right? But how does it come out? That's where we can take a powerful thing, and if we're not careful with it, dangerous things happen because our anger becomes irrational. Our anger is not an anger; it's a temper explosion. Does that sound familiar? Our anger is out of control. And what happens is, it's not an anger, it's just an atom bomb going off. And there's people having collateral damage who happen to be near us when it happened. Here's a humbling question. How much regret is in our past because of things that happened? Things that was said, things that was done, reactions that was made when we didn't control our anger very well. A loaded gun pointing at somebody and it goes off. How much regret? How much things have been hurt by our lack of managing the anger? You see, sometimes how it comes out is the problem. But that's not the only problem. Sometimes the what is the problem. What is it that makes us angry? Because it can come out in a lot of different sources. Maybe our anger is coming out because of some envy. Would we dare say that's ever happened? You know, somebody else has got something and I didn't. And now we're mad, all right. But it's not a godlike anger. We're angry, all right. And you know, you said anger was a good thing. But how's it being used? What's it coming out about? Maybe it's anger. Maybe it's selfishness. Maybe it's some personal vengeance type thing. I've got a friend, really good friend. I don't know his dad very well at all. Met him one time. But I have a friend who will not watch ball games with his own father. because of how his dad acts. Just something goes wrong. His team didn't get what they want. And the next thing you know, the remote control is against the wall. Or something is knocked off the coffee table. That's an extreme thing. I understand that. You understand that. But I've got a friend who will not watch games with his dad because of what we're talking about right now. An irrational, uncontrollable, flying off the handle about trivial things. A ball game? Are you serious? We've all got our teams. But really? Something we have no control over and we're just going to make a spectacle of ourselves? That is the power of anger in its dangerous form. See, it's powerful because it makes us godlike, but it's also powerful because there are dangers that we have to be mindful of and careful of, because it crosses over into wickedness. It can cross over into harming others. I mentioned earlier Jesus' cleansing of the temple. You know, him and Stephen prayed for others that was actively in the process of harming them. The how and the what was controlled by them. When Jesus was cleansing the temple and throwing those tables over, do you picture him? I just picture that scene in your head. Take 2 seconds and picture that scene. Do you picture Jesus as a raven lunatic who just lost control of himself? Is that how you picture that? No, what we picture is an anger. And what we picture is a godlike anger who gets upset at sin every time he sees it. And he did something about it. But he did not lose his mind, as we would say, to use Alabama English. But sometimes me and you do. Another danger is that it could just become our mood. It becomes habitual. Do you know somebody? And if you was describing them, it might be phrased, you know, they just always seem to be mad. Do you know people like that? I'm going to guess if you know more than 5 people, you know somebody like that. Just always in a bad mood. Always ill. Always mad about something. Always ripping and complaining about something. That is not exactly a good epitaph. We might know people like that. I hope we don't want to imitate somebody like that. The answer to this, and we'll get more specific about it in just a moment, but the answer to this is what would be referred to many times as like a righteous indignation. God hates wickedness every day. And we need to hate it every day, all of it. An anger that's flowing out of a love of God, not envy. An anger that flows out of a love of truth, not jealousy. An anger that flows out of an extreme hatred for evil, not a hatred of just some trivial thing like a ball game. An anger that's directed towards Satan and sin, not even toward the ones behaving in it, toward us. A great example of this to me is when David spent those, I don't know what you would call it, his time in the woods, his time bouncing from cave to cave when King Saul was chasing him. And David had ample opportunity to get back at him. There were times he had Saul's life in his hand. Saul, David's close enough to touch his garment with a knife. Saul never knew he was there. Saul, in a deep sleep that the Lord put over him, over his camp, and David is standing right smack on top of him. And he could have took a spear. It's running through. I wonder how we would respond to somebody who mistreated us as badly as Saul mistreated David. And here's David leaving us an example. A man after God's own heart in so many ways, leaving us an example. Let's understand the danger. So now, with all this done, okay, powerful weapon. Dangerous weapon. So we better understand how to control it. Is that not what the parents are teaching the children when they take them through their gun lessons? Powerful weapon. Dangerous weapon. This can hurt people. So please be careful. And here is how we be careful. And anger. Powerful weapon. godly weapon, Christ-like weapon. It'll keep us out of sin if it's trained properly. But if untrained, can destroy us. If untrained, it can destroy our family. It can destroy our reputation. It can destroy all that spiritual fellowship that we wanted to, that we want to enjoy, that we spoke of earlier. Well, how do we do it? Well, first of all, we need to acknowledge that we're the agent that brings anger out. Others can't control our anger. God won't control it. There's a difference. God could because of His power, but He will not. He gives us free will. Others can't. Jesus extremely hated wickedness. But He couldn't make the Pharisees extremely hate it. Jesus extremely hated wickedness. He's not going to force us to extremely hate it. We have choice. So the first thing we've got to acknowledge is we are the agents that bring that out. And it's interesting. What are some of the things that would make you angry? Just think for just a moment. There are certain things that make us mad the second we see it. Could you imagine? You're walking down the street, you see somebody maybe in the yard, and they just haul back and for no reason kick a dog in the head. Or take a bat and start hitting a cat. Or whatever. There are things that would get your blood boiling in about 0.7 seconds. Here's the question. What are they? What are they? And how many of them are of a spiritual nature? And how many of them flow into that envious nature and jealousy nature and trivial nature? How much of the things that makes us spitting mad? How much of the are they the things that would make God mad? That's a question we've got to answer. We better have an answer for that. Look at Ephesians chapter 5. As you're turning there, I'll just ask the question. Had me and you been a part of the inner workings of Jerusalem in the first century, would a marketplace in the temple area have bothered us? Or would it just become a part of life? Would we have viewed it like we now view Walmart? Well, that's where I go to buy my stuff when I need it. I got an offer sacrifice, and they can do it. I can buy what I need from them. And would we have gotten as angry as Jesus did? Would we have seen it as a place of prayer that's been turned into a den of thieves? Or would we have walked right on by? Ephesians chapter 5, read verse 11 with me. Have no fellowship, partnership, joining, association, communion. Remember all the words? Have no fellowship with unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. Meditate on the danger that sin can do. And we've got to see its ugliness, because compromising robs us of the very ability to be angry about sin. Think about that. You see, if we do become calloused about it, and everybody at the work knows that, you know, we've ignored this. It robs us of the power that we mentioned earlier. We've got to recognize darkness when we see it, and we've got to expose that for what it is. And so now it's application time. Because this has all been fun and good. And I don't know that, I mean, these have been pretty clear verses. Not a lot of debate, I don't think you could beat about any of these verses. Here's where it gets personal. Does number 2 and number 3 sit close to us? I can't imagine. I can't conceive any of us reading those prior passages and saying, yeah, anger is a powerful thing. I want to be godlike. I want it to help me evade sin. And but does number 2 and number 3 give us trouble? Have we fallen to some of the dangers? Have we not handled the how and the what as we ought? Have we not always controlled and managed this powerful weapon as we should have? Is that a problem? Well, before we go into some applications on that, first of all, let's don't bury that problem. Let's don't pretend that it doesn't exist. Let's admit it honestly and let's admit it openly. Look in Colossians chapter 3. It matters to God. Do not ignore this, because we are expected to do something about it. Colossians chapter 3, We're going to read verse 8. And what I want us to recognize is we can't be content. The first question that I posed to you this morning is, have we ever done something? And well, I was angry. As if that just erased it. Don't worry about it. I was mad, so don't worry about that. Just let that slide. No, we can't be content because God expects us to act. Colossians chapter 3, verse 8. Put these things off. Anger. Exactly what we're looking at right now. An anger that, and this is the inference of an anger that leads to sin. In Ephesians 4, it was one that would, anger that was controlled and managed. But remove from yourself, verse 8, anger, wrath, and malice. Now, me and you kind of use those synonymously. And in present-day common conversation, probably they would all fit. But there is a difference in them. The Holy Spirit's not being redundant here. Anger is the emotion that we've been talking about all morning. Wrath is letting that anger lead to action. It's no longer just an emotion. It's acting out on it. Malice is acting out in a way that brings harm to somebody. A legal phrase. Malice is, I do something, and that doing is intended to hurt you. My anger leading to action, and the action is an intent to hurt. And so you got these levels here. All of them expected to be done away. Put away. But what I want you to emphasize is, don't be content, and we've got to prepare to change, because getting rid of these things means something to God. So with that all being said, turn to 1 Peter 2. 1 Peter 2. It's one of those things, easier said than done. I have an older preacher friend. He's retired. His health doesn't allow him to teach anymore in any public way at all. But he had a phrase. Maybe some of you have heard this phrase. I haven't heard it from anybody young, but it was apparently a common thing in times past. He would say, you know, that verse lathers. And the idea behind that was, you know, it's just easy to teach. And lots of, you've all had soap in you, and you get in, you all of a sudden, your bubbles just going everywhere. That was the idea that he would say. That verse lathers. Meaning there's a lot of teaching to be made from it. Here's a verse that lathers, and it lathers really, really easy. The hard part is applying it. But let's look at the clearness of it. 1 Peter chapter 2, how is it that we need to be busy controlling our anger and understanding and managing the dangerous things about it? Well, we follow our example. So let's look at the lather, verse 21. This is why you were called, okay? That's got our attention, right? This is what it's about. This is why you've been called. Because Christ suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow in His steps, who did no sin, nor was guile found in His mouth, who when He was reviled, He reviled not again. When He suffered, He threatened not. So before we go any farther, He uses Jesus as the example, one who was mistreated, but He didn't let His anger, He didn't let wrath happen, He didn't let malice happen. Reviled, but He didn't revile. He beaten, but He doesn't fight back. Look at the last phrase. He was reviled, He reviled not again. He suffered, but He threatened not. But, here's what He did do. But, committed Himself to Him that judges righteously. What He did was, instead of exploding, instead of the temper tantrum, instead of anger out of jealousy, or wrath out of envy, or personal vengeance, or whatever, He committed it to God. Turned it over to Him. Let Him have it. Let me just ask the question. How disappointing would it be had on the cross, when Jesus was being mocked, if He had just mocked Him back? While He was being smarted off to, what if Jesus hanging on the cross had just smarted off back to Him? Would you be a little disappointed in that? Would it change the entire narrative had Jesus smarted off and got even? I want you to remember that question. Would you be disappointed had He acted like that? Because now turn to chapter 4. We have to come back into this. It's fun and dandy to lather up chapter 2 and talk about how Jesus is the example. That's easy to preach. But here's the conclusion. Chapter 4, look in verse 19. Therefore, let them that suffer according to the will of God commit the keeping of their souls to Him. Who do you think the Him is there? It's the same Him back in chapter 2. How did Jesus do it on the cross? He committed Himself to a righteous judge. When He was mistreated, when things were not going as they should have gone to Him in the flesh, He committed that to God. Did you catch who chapter 4 is talking about? Christians who are being mistreated. Christians who may not be getting everything in the flesh like they might like for it to play out. Let them that suffer according to the will of God commit the keeping of their souls to Him. Here's how Jesus did it. And it's exactly what God told us to do. It's how He told us to handle it too. So now, you remember the question I asked you? Jesus committed it to God and He just did it. He endured. I asked the question, would it disappoint you had He responded differently? Had He flown off the handle, smarted off? Would that disappoint you? Because here's the... Should it not be just as disappointing when we do it? We fly off the handle. We're going to be disappointed if Jesus did it. It changes the narrative of His life if He did it. It doesn't change the narrative of our life if we do it. We got to be consistent. See, Jesus committed it. And that's how He endured. And we're given the very same admonition. Should be just as disappointing if we were to retaliate in an improper way. Get your songbooks out. What are we doing? What's this been about? God's armed us. God has made all things possible for us to enjoy and have eternal life. And one of those things is a conscience that can train and control our anger. And if it's properly trained, we will hate sin. And if we hate sin, we're going to stay away from it. And if we're staying away from it, we're going to be treating sin the same way God and His Son treated sin. We become Godlike. We're in fellowship with Him. We're in the light. But like a gun, dangerous. And we got to handle it properly. We got to make sure we're angry about the right things. We got to make sure it's coming out in the right manner. But aren't we glad that there is an avenue of forgiveness? Because I'm not... Sometimes you just ask rhetorical questions. Here would be one of them. Have you ever been angry about something you shouldn't have been? Have you ever acted improperly because you were angry? Every last one of us. Aren't we thankful that God is a patient God, a forgiving God? Aren't we thankful that repentance is acknowledged? And aren't we thankful forgiveness and justification and a declaration of not guilty by Christ's blood is possible? He's an awesome God, and we sing about Him, and let's not ever forget that. If you're not a Christian, please obey. Stop holding on to the pew. Stop just delaying. You know who He is. You know what He did. You know what you need to do. Do it. For those of us that are having issues with this very issue, Jesus left us away, and it's a struggle. Easy to lather it up, easy to preach it. Living it is difficult, but don't quit the fight. Fight till you die to get control of this so we can use it properly. If anybody needs prayers, there are people here who love you. We're on your side, and we want to help. Come forward while we stand and sing.